a very exciting time for Lake Placid.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode, we sit down with the mayor of Lake Placid, New York, for an extended interview. Well, Lake Placid is a popular tourist location, not only for its Olympic legacy, but its location in the Central Adirondacks. The popularity of Airbnb and other short-term rental options allowing local homeowners to rent their properties is creating some challenges for the village, including complaints from some residents that unregistered hotels are being operated in residential areas. Republican Lake Placid Mayor Craig Randall spoke with WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley ahead of Tuesday night's public meeting.
So, Mayor Randall, a lot of things coming up of concern in the village of Lake Placid. And when you go on to the village website, one of the first things that you see is a notice of an upcoming public hearing regarding the vacation rental regulations. Vacation rentals have been a big issue for the village.
As with many communities across the country and certainly here in New York State as well, because the governor mentioned them Sunday when he was in Saranac Lake, the growth of vacation rental in Lake Placid has been has a major impact on our community, and in the minds of some, it is replacing housing that would otherwise be available for workforce and young families in the village. While there's some element of truth in that, also I think the type of housing stock that we have in Lake Placid is sorely missing some of the needed housing that younger families and workforce housing requires, and a lot of that is rental property. So there is an argument in the community that vacation rentals has taken away a lot of that opportunity. But at the same time, I think we also have to look at the fact that the vacation rental industry itself is something that has grown across not only this country but across the world, and it appears to represent a type of travel that many members of the traveling public seem to prefer, and it's really no surprise that Lake Placid, which is a long-standing history of welcoming people from around the world, it's no surprise to me that we're faced with having something in the neighborhood of 600 of our home sites that are engaged in vacation rentals. Most of those represent homes that are second homes for people who themselves come here and spend time in Lake Placid, but when they're not using them, utilize vacation rentals as a way to help them, I suspect, cover the cost of maintaining the property, keeping it heated, paying the taxes and insurance and all of those things that any homeowner would deal with. But in the end, there's a challenge here in the community in that we don't have enough housing to take care of our workers and our young families that might otherwise stay here in Lake Placid, whose families might grow and help enhance our school population, which over the years has been declining, as it is across the Adirondacks in many of our school districts. But Lake Placid, again, represents a real focal point in terms of the traveling public. And, you know, our commercial lodging hotels and motels in and by themselves, even today, do not provide all of the housing opportunity that the traveling public is looking for. So it is a real challenge for Lake Placid, and we're working diligently on it. We're trying to come out with a set of standards that will apply appropriate public health and safety regulations to these properties, because right now their use as a vacation rental is completely unregulated. And also we're trying to find a way to soften the impact on neighborhoods that one time were all family neighborhoods and now are largely vacation rental neighborhoods, at least on the weekends and during vacation times.
When we take a look at vacation rentals and you look at the proposed regulations that are on the website that people will have a chance to comment on, things like having permits required and, you know, limitations on the length of stays and things like that, why don't the vacation rentals go under any other codes within the village for, say, hotel use or something like that?
Well, at the present time, the properties, the second homes or vacation rental homes that are being occupied, because they're not all second homes, some of them represent individuals who saw an opportunity and have come into the village and bought multiple homes and basically operate them as small, independent lodging properties, which is a business. Hotels and motels and boarding rooms and rooming houses are recognized in our land use code. Short-term vacation rentals fall through the cracks in the code. It does not specifically permit them, and arguably they represent a conditional use which should have gone before our planning board over the years, but I think partly because of the fact that we've always traditionally had some of this activity here, didn't go in that direction. But then with the advent of the Airbnbs, VRBOs, and the advent of the Internet, all of a sudden you had the perfect storm. Everything came together, and all of a sudden there was this wonderful opportunity for second homeowners, who we've had for many years in Lake Placid before, had found a way that they could rent their home when they're not here and make a little money on it. Many people refer to these as their little business. And I said, frankly, the word little business is really a violation of our land use code as it relates to our residential neighborhood descriptions. My hope is that by requiring permits that we'll be able to get an inventory of exactly where these properties are and then look at the residential zoning districts and try to modify them and protect those areas as best we can in the future, so that we don't have this widespread invasion of this activity going on all the time in all the neighborhoods. There is some opportunity there. Unfortunately, without a permitting system or a licensing system, there is no meaningful way of knowing. I mean, you can drive through neighborhoods, and if you drive through them on a weeknight, you might not see any lights on. That might be a vacation rental property, or it might just be a second home and the homeowners are not here. On the other hand, you can you can drive through on a weekend, and I sometimes refer to the weekends as when the weekend warriors are here, because that's when we get our complaints about uncontrolled parking, uncontrolled neighborhood nuisances, overcrowding of neighborhoods and properties. And frankly, these are people that are here for two or three nights and then they're gone. They have no connection with their neighbors next door, who in many cases are full-time residents of our community, that feel that they're entitled to have better control over what goes on in their neighborhood than we currently are enjoying.
You mentioned, you know, the neighborhoods and dealing with the people that come in this way. How big a demand is there for these short-term rental units from the tourists coming in, and how many residents want to provide it?
Well, that's one of the things we're working on in the proposed legislation. There's a distinction that we're recommending between what we would refer to as hosted short-term vacation rentals, which is where the resident owner occupies the property at least 275 nights a year. I guess that gives them some time for vacations. But they have to be on the property when it is occupied as a vacation rental. We don't seem to see many complaints from properties where management is or owners are also present at the same time. And contrast that with non-hosted vacation rentals, which is where the owner is nowhere in sight and generally is not here while the property is occupied. And, you know, that sets up a situation where when things get out of control, right now our residents are complaining that they're dealing with noise, they're dealing with other inappropriate activities going on in the dead of night when the neighborhood should be quiet while people are sleeping, parking, sometimes parking on sidewalks because these homes, many of them are older homes that never had more than what a single family would require for parking, which might be two parking places or maybe three or four. But in reality, we'll see 8 or 10 cars parked in the same dooryard. These are things that are offensive to our residents who want to enjoy the peace and quiet of their neighborhood. And frankly, if we could get to that point, I suspect that the community would be somewhat relieved with taking those steps. I would hope that this legislation would create those opportunities and, as I said, would also define this activity, which is not specifically defined in our land use code, and just what restrictions would have to apply to it in order for it to exist.
Well, you mentioned earlier, and I think it's fairly common knowledge, that short-term rental issues are cropping up all over the place. Did you, as you were crafting these new regulations, look at other communities to see what they're doing, or is this pretty unique to Lake Placid and North Elba?
Over the last 2.5 or 3 years, we've done significant research of other communities. Admittedly, it was hit or miss depending upon where we saw an opportunity to learn from places like Vail that are major resorts. Each community has its own distinct character, however, and that changes how this legislation is drafted. The most recent effort that we made was a study that was performed by a group from Saratoga called Camoin Associates, and that compared our proposed legislation to roughly 10 other vacation rental communities around the country, not all out in the Midwest, but some were in California, some were in Colorado, some were here in the eastern states. But it allowed us to look at what we were designing and see how it contrasted with other communities. And in that process, I think we made some improvements in terms of the language. This is where we began to consider the thought that there's a difference between a hosted and a non-hosted vacation rental. And so as a result, you're seeing in this current round of legislation, which will go to a public hearing February 25th, that there is provision made for those owners who are local and resident owners will be able to have less restriction on them in terms of the number of nights they can rent. If you're a non-hosted property, the limit will, at the moment, as it's written in the proposed legislation, is 90 days, and I would say that even that is controversial as we speak. But hosted have no limit in terms of the number of nights. And again, it's the idea that if you're a local resident and you're renting your home, you're on the site. Most of the complaints and issues that we're trying to address are already being addressed by the owner particularly. And I think you'll see in the legislation that there's a real effort to where we've come to understand the distinction between a free-for-all and a controlled atmosphere. And what property owner that's living on his property is going to allow for partying to go on all night long or for other abuses of the property that shouldn't be happening?
Mayor Randall, the public hearing that's coming up, how much would that lead to any possible changes, or is the proposed regulation pretty much set?
Well, this is the third time we've gone back to a public hearing, and obviously we want the input from the community. And the public hearings, at least the two that have been held so far, have certainly had a substantial presence of resident owners who have their concerns, and also the vacation rental owners, which includes not only those who are second homeowners, but the other group, which just comes in here and buys up houses and is running them as hotels in our neighborhoods that are not designed for that type of use. And the two boards each independently have to adopt this legislation. And I anticipate that there will be some minor tweaking done beyond this, but I would say that if this stays on the course that it's on, that it would be minor at this point. I think we've made every effort possible to try to accommodate both the needs of our resort community and also the needs of our residents. And at this point, I think there are many residents that are going to not be happy with the fact that there's even the thought that this activity would be permitted in the future, although I'm beginning to get a sense that maybe at least for owner-occupied short-term rentals that they understand those have been going on here for generations. It didn't just happen in the last year or even 4 years. But And again, the people that are seriously engaged in this business, that run it as, quote, a business, actually, by any standard in the current land use code, are in violation, in my mind.
When do you want to have these regulations in place? What's the target?
The target date would be that, assuming there's no other substantial changes made, the two boards would each independently adopt them sometime in the coming few weeks. Ideally, the legislation will have to have a moratorium of some sort to recognize the fact that some second home rentals are already committed for this coming season, which is large, predominantly summer. So how that's going to be done, I don't think we've made a decision on that yet, but clearly in the enforcement process, we're going to have knowledge of those that are already committed that may already exceed whatever conditions and limits we put into the legislation. That will happen.
One of the other things that's of concern in the village of Lake Placid is the Main Street project. I believe in January, the local business group met and expressed some concerns about what that would mean for their businesses as the work along Main Street was done. Can you give us an update on the project and what you're doing to alleviate some of businesses' concerns?
We have a group that was formed. It's a broad cross-section of the community, of which of the 20-odd people that are on that Main Street discussion group. The majority of organizations that participate in this have a seat at the table, and the Lake Placid Business Association, given the fact that the impact is largely something of concern to them, has four seats at the table. So they're aware of every step in this process. They started meeting back in October, and at the time we were thinking that we would be going out to bid sometime in March. But as we've worked through the process now, it looks like we'll be going out to bid later this spring, and probably awarding a bid in June or maybe even later with a fall start. So this is in part because of the continuing efforts to take the comments of our Main Street people and our other community people and try to come up with solutions that will work for the community. Yes, it's certainly true that any time you take a Main Street business district and put construction in it, regardless of whether we keep it out of the July and August real busy season or not, is going to be a concern. And there are those who will tell us today that that this project will likely bankrupt them. All I can say is, these are projects, you're looking right here at some manuals that represent the same project discussions dating back to 1999, and the project hasn't really changed in 20 years, except that we now know that we have to upgrade our water main systems along the street for fire protection purposes, and also just to be able to provide more water service to a community that is growing. And in addition to that, of course, since 1999, in just the last 2 years, there's been a major focus on the welfare of Mirror Lake, which runs adjacent to the street. So the answer, in part, to try to slow down the scientific findings of adverse impacts of road salt and other contaminants flowing into the lake, is a new stormwater system that will divert that water flow away from the lake and into bioretention systems, where we can do, hopefully, we can slow down the process of the adverse impacts on Mirror Lake. That's an issue that is very high. I have a letter here signed by some 200 people in the community, most of them Main Street businesses, interestingly enough, that wanted something done about that. And, obviously the simple thing would be to just stop using ice removers on our street. There are no environmentally friendly ice removers out there that we're aware of. We've tried several different options, including liquid removers, that did not work. At this point, we continue to use ice removers such as salt, but we try to do it in substantially lower applications than what might have been done a few years ago. Even the equipment we're using today is different so that it controls the spread of it as opposed to just broadcasting it everywhere. So the Main Street project is largely required because of the water main situation, also because of the Mirror Lake situation and the stormwater systems. And alongside that, there are other opportunities that we can capitalize on while we're digging up for those, and that is improving the sidewalks, which admittedly desperately need to be updated. There are other opportunities that we're, the group is talking about, such as wayfinding signage, maybe some seating for our senior community that would like to be on the main street more, but there's no place for them to sit when they get tired. Hopefully we'll find, although not on the street itself, unfortunately, more opportunity for parking than what currently exists. And there are other projects that are under discussion that hopefully, I have my fingers crossed, may result in some additional parking. But in the meantime, we're also trying to spruce the community up for the upcoming university games in 2023. Probably one of the most important public safety features that we're trying to build into the street is safer crosswalks for everybody, pedestrians and drivers alike, because today, in the wintertime, you cannot even find our sidewalks. The proposal will be to use a complete street crosswalk design, which literally allows a pedestrian to step out toward the traffic lane, but it would allow them to see an oncoming car. It would also allow a driver to see a pedestrian getting ready to cross the street. And that's a major problem we have in on Main Street in Lake Placid today. And although the sidewalks that are there have been there for a number of years, they don't provide the bump outs that allow a pedestrian to step out far enough to see if there's something coming or not. Nor, of course, does it allow a driver to see that there might be somebody that's starting to engage in crossing the walk. And I think we're all aware of the fact that a pedestrian has the right of way if they're using the crosswalks. We'd also like the pedestrians to use the crosswalks more often. Because today, because they don't see where they are, you find them darting between cars. You as a driver are taken by surprise. I've had it happen to me. We've all had it happen. So it's largely projects like that, and when you're digging up the street, that's the time to do these other type projects. And I don't think that the community and the Main Street is adverse to that. I just think that they're nervous about what happens during any construction period, which is it's a distraction to business. And we will work with the Main Street to do the best we can to coordinate between the contractor and the business interests on the street. We had a small example of that 2 years ago when we upgraded some of the sewer line systems under the street. And we were largely able to keep the sidewalks open. We were able to keep traffic flowing. We do intend to continue to keep traffic flowing continuously throughout this period. Parking, to the extent possible, we're going to keep it available. I'm actually looking right now at the lot across the street from the bank on Main Street. We're hoping to get that redesigned and cleaned up and a new wall put in to replace the collapsing wall before we start digging up the Main Street. And the effort there is going to be to try to keep those parking places available during construction. Construction is likely going to be done in phases, maybe 300 to 500 feet of one lane at a time, so that not the whole street is shut down. Those are just some of the things that are being designed, but obviously until we get it out to bid and we can bring the contractor to the table, there are things that we can't nail down completely. But the commitment is there to do the best job we can, not only for the project itself, but also for the Main Street.
On a lighter note, 40th anniversary of the Olympic Games, I know that you were out on the rather frigid day the other day to help light the cauldron. Have you got plans moving forward here to meet any of the Olympic athletes or go to any of the other events?
Well, I've been out every single evening doing something. I keep a calendar in front of me, and I have a number of commitments to do the things that mayors should do. It's a very exciting time for Lake Placid. I mean, to be doing the 40th anniversary, recognizing that we're coming up in 3 years on the University Games, which were last year in 1972. And also over the weekend, I was meeting with a representative from the International Olympic Committee, whose responsibility is planning the celebrations for the 50th and also 100th anniversaries of Winter Olympic Games. And as you know, Lake Placid in 2030 and 32, will be celebrating both a 50th and a 100th anniversary for their Olympic Games. But she was being entertained at all of our venues, and also she participated in some of the 40th anniversary celebration that was going on. So we're very, very pleased to have her here to be able to see what we do during our own little local ceremonies. And she was on the stage with me when the cauldron was relit, enjoying that 0 degree temperature. And then she continued to participate in all the events. In fact, I saw her at trivia night, which my wife insisted I had to participate in. And actually, I was surprised. Our team came in second by a half a point.
Not too bad, then.
Not too bad. But had they listened to the mayor when we were talking about, I think it was the tennis players, I mentioned the name McEnroe, and somebody mentioned the name Connors. The right name was McEnroe. We would have won by a half a point. So there you are. But it was all an enjoyable evening. It's fun, and I think Saturday evening we were participating in a memories evening at the Northwoods Inn, where maybe 30 of us congregated and talked about some of the things that we remembered from our own personal experiences or from our own employed experiences, as was my case, during the build-up to 1980, and it was a fascinating evening. Those were all recorded for posterity, and, you know, it's important that we do that because those memories, as people pass on and move away, get forgotten. What's really neat is that when you put 30 people in the room, one memory triggers another memory, and it just goes on from there. It was a wonderful couple of hours.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome.
All right, that's it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.